Right, that concludes for today our discussion on paper four. We'll come back to that at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. So that takes us on now to the review of the tentative agenda decisions, which there were three published in the July update. First one is paper five, which relates to a repeat application of IFRS 1. And judging by the overwhelming support and the lack of overwhelming criticism, I propose that we confirm our tentative agenda decision. Anybody object to that? Okay, then that's confirmed. The next one is agenda paper six. This was an issue that we decided to defer for further consideration by the staff, dealing with recognizing a deferred tax asset for unrealized losses on available for sale debt securities. Subsequent to that, we've had a few comment letters that have come in. There's also been a number of discussions that have taken place with representatives of some of the financial services businesses that are involved in this. I believe, although there wasn't time to send it out with these papers, that they have or are in the process of submitting further comments to assist in our understanding of that. And one of the concerns raised is perhaps more process-related than technical, although some people don't like the answer that tentatively we came to way back when. But it's a concern that if there is going to be a change in accounting that is caused by a decision not to do anything, that it seems to defy any due process and any opportunity for people to be able to comment on it. So really the staff have set out in paper six, very short paper in fact, that they're volunteering to do even more work in trying to resolve the issue. I'm not sure to what extent Ruth was the author of one of the letters that came in, but I think it raised some very helpful points that we need to give some attention to. So my recommendation to the committee is that we allow the staff to continue to explore the alternatives, and perhaps we should broaden it up rather than saying whether it's just an issue that needs to be interpreted or not, is to look at an annual improvement that might actually improve financial reporting so it's clearer to investors, or it makes more clear to investors, I should say, what the circumstances are that gave rise to the condition in the first place and what the expectations are for resolving that in the future. If it's an annual improvement, then we, in effect, get the benefit of both a technically correct solution and one that goes through due process so that those that disagree currently with our position or have an alternative presentation form are at least allowed to express their comments and views. But the issue should be really perhaps not to ask the staff just to write an annual improvement that clarifies only the position that we took before, but to consider, in fact, what the accounting should be and whether or not through the annual improvement, in fact, a change to, I would imagine, to IS 12, not as part of the post-implementation review, which is well overdue, but whether or not there is a change that's required in there to clarify any of the two issues or either of the two issues that we discussed before. So I'm not asking you to confirm any agenda decision, just does anybody object to the approach I've described to let the staff do some more work to come back at the next meeting, either with an annual improvement or if they say, no, we can't possibly improve on the earlier decision, some way in which we can perhaps strengthen the standard so it's clear to those who are using an alternative that the alternative shouldn't continue. Jean-Louis?
Not object, but I was just asking whether there are additional technical arguments that have been supplied from the last meeting or not. I mean, because in my view, there was quite a clear consensus around the table on the issue between the IFRS members committee members, sorry. Is there any additional arguments developed or that could be incorporated in such improvements or not?
David, Michael?
My initial response to that is our outreach has as much as anything focused on, I call it, the practical situations that people are facing and a more specific practical pattern than maybe we had an initial request. So more application of guidance to specific fact patterns rather than necessarily opening up new technical arguments. I think the main technical arguments we've discussed in our outreach are actually reflected in the comment letters that we received or in the agenda papers that were discussed initially.
Scott?
I continue to be disappointed that we're taking so long to finalize the decision. I can't really object to doing more work because objecting to that would suggest we shouldn't do anything, because I don't think objecting to that would mean we're going to finalize the decision that isn't in front of us. So I guess I don't object to doing more work, but I'm very disappointed that we're seemingly unwilling to state what I think is the obvious. This isn't about future taxable income. We don't have a taxable loss yet because we haven't sold. We have a book loss, a financial reporting loss. We don't have a taxable loss. We're not going to have future taxable income related to this security. The argument is we will never have a loss for tax purposes. It isn't an argument that we're going to have future income, and by the way, we're allowed to predict future income if it's objective. That's not the issue. The argument for not having to do the regular deferred tax accounting on this is that although there's a book loss, we'll never have a tax loss because it's going to go up in value. Well, heck, I can make that argument for a lot of assets. I got a piece of real estate. It's dropped in value a lot. I live in it. It's worth a lot less than it was when I bought it. If I was doing my own accounting for that, I don't think I get to say, but the housing market always recovers. So I can assume that when I sell it, I'll sell it for more. You don't get to do that. That's what we're being asked. Because that's the only argument where you could look at the deferred tax effect related to this one item all by itself. In every other way of thinking about this, you have to look at whether you need a valuation allowance whether you can record a deferred tax asset in the context of the entity's taxable position as a whole. And whether you think you're going to have a loss ultimately on this security or not is not the big deal in that consideration. The big deal in that consideration is, do you have enough objective evidence to say that the entity is going to be in a taxable position down the road? If you do have enough evidence to say that you're going to be in a taxable position down the road, you can book the deferred tax asset. You don't have a problem. The issue doesn't come up. The issue comes up because, on the whole, we don't think that there's enough probability, likelihood, objective evidence to say the entity is going to have taxable income in the future. And because of that, if we look at the temporary difference on this item by itself, we wouldn't be able to record the deferred tax asset. So we try to come up with a reason that we don't have to look at it in the context of everything else. And the argument would be, oh, we're never going to have the loss, so don't worry about it. But the only reason that argument works is because we're really, really convinced that this one's going to go up in value. Well, I don't think we get to predict that. So I'm disappointed that we're still playing around with this issue where I think the answer is clear. Now, I recognize that in the U.S. We have made this answer unclear. I think that's unfortunate under U.S. GAAP. I was hoping we wouldn't make the same mistake under IFRS.
That's why we're asking the staff to do some more work to make sure that we don't make the same mistake and we do make it clear. And I'm not presupposing that the staff is going to come back either with your answer or with another one, but they'll come back with something that I think is defensible. Not really into technical discussion on this, are you? I know that you would like to, but no, good. That's all right. We'll switch you off then.
I agree with him on one point. It's all about, do we have enough taxable income in the future? That's what we have to make a decision about. I do not agree with him that it's about whether the devaluation reverses in the future. We are talking about temporary differences here. So what we are talking about is, does this difference reverse in the future when I'm going to sell at maturity date the security? And this difference will reverse. At which level? At a higher value level or lower doesn't matter for temporary differences, but it will reverse. So I would not agree with that on this issue with Scott, but I agree with him on the other one. It's all about, do we have taxable income in the future?
All right. I'm sure David and Mitsuhiro have taken that into account. Moving on to the third of these, IAS 21, the issue there to deal with repayments of investments and currency translation account recycling. A couple of comment letters in here. Just to remind you, though, the reason that we didn't take it any further forward was we didn't expect to reach a consensus on a timely basis, which is our shorthand way of saying that we were all over the place on this and couldn't get agreement clearly on what the solution was or what the clarification was. That, I believe, is still the same position. We haven't come back with any further technical arguments. There's a suggestion, a proposal on page 5, the appendix for the agenda decision, in clarifying the background information to add in an additional sentence and to delete part of the previous one. So with that modification, does anybody have any comments or disagreement with it? Jana?
Just to perhaps get the committee just to think about, and I'm not convinced in my own mind, the Canadian letter, I have to admit, I did have some empathy with the arguments that they put around...
Are you talking about the technical arguments?
No, about actually looking at perhaps the bigger picture to say, are we actually helping anybody by doing what we're doing here?
And no, I know... We couldn't reach a consensus.
I
know that we like to help people, but we only help people provided not more than 4 people would object.
Yeah, okay, and we couldn't reach a consensus, but the Canadians are suggesting, could we look at it at a bigger picture level as opposed to, so to look at it more, what does partial disposal mean? And I'm just wondering whether we could do that. And I know, and the reason I'm saying this partly is I know that we can't reach consensus is part of our ability not to take things forward, but at the end of the day, if we could do something where we could reach a consensus that helped, I believe we should really try to do so, because quite frankly, I think to say we can't reach consensus and then not say what we are going to do, if we can't reach consensus to say we recommend that the board looks at it or something, because if we're saying we can't reach consensus, we're saying we accept diversity, we accept you can do whatever the hell you like, and we're not going to deal with it. And we get laughed at and we're not credible.
You do remember the discussion we've just had on agenda paper 4?
Yes.
Okay.
But there, we made a recommendation as to where it was to go.
Is there any, I can't remember, is there any prospect of a wider review of IAS 21 coming down the track? Is that remotely on the cards? Because it is a bit of a shame to leave this open, but...
We had a request from Korea in particular to have a look at some aspects of it. It's gone through the national standard setters. It's certainly on our books to think about, and I think it's another topic that will feed into our agenda setting proposal. We're looking now to shape our agenda for post June 2011, in terms of building up our consultation, because we have a public consultation on this. It's a one every 3 years, and this will be our first one, and then that will lead into assessing things like this. So at the I know that's sort of a waffly answer, but the answer, it is
on our radar, but there is no active agenda proposal, and there's unlikely to be anything on our agenda till after June 2011 would feed through into one of those, into that decision process.
I have the same view with Joanna, and I respect the word written in Deloitte's comment letter. It's to make it as a post-2011 agenda. And I think a potential divergence is very large because the currently foreign currency exchange rate volatility is very large, and also the sovereignty risk issue is attracting attention. And in practice, this TTA recycling issue is a very serious issue. So therefore, I think we'd better to tackle this issue as a post-2011 topic. We should put that, in a sense, top priority on this issue.
I'm always impressed by the way you can express concerns about recycling with such sincerity. The issue we're talking about here is not foreign currency volatility, whether it's happened or not. It's merely when is the timing of the recycling of something that happened perhaps 20 years ago or maybe 50 years ago and book it into income. Perhaps I should defer to the investors and the analysts that are present at this meeting to ask them of whether they think that it would be more useful information to investors to really put an urgent project on the board's agenda now to look at timing of recycling of currency translation. But I'll let some of the other members of the committee speak first. Guido?
Well, I'm also an investor, so you could also ask me if you want to have an answer. But anyway.
I thought auditors had a conflict of interest.
Well,
in
it depends on in what you can invest. Reading especially the Canadian letter, I was also a concern that what we looked at the last meeting was only a tiny part of the problem. Because what we concentrated on is, does a proportionate or an absolute change in ownership interest or sale fit into the definition of a partial disposal, which was not the question which was asked. The question which was asked was, do we have to recycle CTA only in circumstances where we have proportionate reduction or also where we have an absolute reduction? And that would also include a total reduction, not only a partial reduction. So I was wondering, maybe at the end of the day we come up with the same solution, but I was wondering whether the committee members reading these comment letters that suggest, well, don't concentrate on 48D, but look, for instance, at the whole paragraph and on 49 of 21, whether this might change your view and whether you then may think that you come up with a solution. If this did not change the views of the committee members, yes, then we are stuck, we will not come up with the solution. But I would be interested whether the committee members would say, well, maybe we just looked at one tiny part of it and maybe we should look at the whole thing again. And then what convinced me was that in my point of view, when you look at paragraph 49, it tells you what reduction is, and that includes capital repayment, which in my point of view is an absolute reduction and not a proportional reduction, but that's just the conclusion that I draw from the comment letters that I've seen. Now, if all the others didn't change their views based on the comment letters, then we obviously will not come to a conclusion.
Scott?
I think I had this view last meeting, and earlier this meeting I expressed a similar view. I thought we gave up too quick. That we...
Oh, no, I got to say it again? No.
I thought last meeting that we had given up too quick, and, you know, so I support giving this a shot. Maybe the Canadian letter provides us with some additional ways to think about it that might lead to a chance at a consensus. I'm not sure, but I'd prefer giving it another chance. You know, as to the question of, gee, is recycling really important on the whole?
Well, I would support somebody coming up with a principle as to what goes above and below net income. And once we have a principle, then I can tell you whether recycling is important or not. We don't have a principle, and the literature says recycle. So I presume that somebody thought it was important, and I think that at least preparers do think that net income is still an important measure. And if we're going to say, let's not answer this question because recycling is unimportant, what we're really saying is net income is not really an important measure. Comprehensive income is the important measure. I might very well be supportive of that, but I don't think there is general support for that in the community. So, you know, at this point, I think we have recycling for a reason, and we've been asked a question. We can see different views. Frankly, I think that, you know, anything we could do to help resolve some divergence would be helpful. I have a preferred view, but I think that there are other answers that I'd probably not object to as well, because they'd be an improvement on what we have now. So I guess I'd, you know, I'd be of a mind to give it a shot.
So I guess, Scott, in your case, looking at the big picture is taking on a project to look at the principle of OCI and recycling.
Well, that would be lovely, although I suspect that we would not be able to reach consensus in a timely manner on that.
Maybe.
I would agree with Scott that I think we gave up a little bit too soon on this one. And this is an issue that I've seen in practice for as long as I've been in accounting, for years and years, where there is certainly an inconsistency in treatment amongst preparers. And some companies go to great length to avoid. They look at it, unless they are out of an investment 100%, they leave the CTA balance alone. And they go to great lengths to leave just a tiny little investment in place. Never, yeah, I'm not talking about credit. I'm talking about debit. It's never a credit. It's never a credit. But when it's a debit, and people go to extraordinary lengths. I've seen some companies over my career just go to extraordinary lengths not to recognize this. And so I do think that it would be worth our while to try and at least come to a view where we could perhaps reach a decision.
Okay. Tack, you're entitled to have the final word.
So finally, my turn. So I have to explain the situation. For example, if the company has a variety of operations in all over the world, and if the volatility of foreign exchange rate is volatile, then company has to do something. And there are a variety of choices. One is to withdraw it, or to pay the dividend, or just to make a merger or something. But every time we have to think about whether the CTA is going to be recycled or not. Because a company may have a huge amount of debit side at CTA, so then we have to consider what kind of situation will happen if this kind of reorganization we made. So CTA recycling is always the headache of company's management. And as Scott said, it depends on how important the net income is. Of course, it's just comprehensive income. Within the comprehensive income, it's fine. But there are some people who still think that the net income is important, and which I do not agree. But so as long as there are people who is thinking in that way, we need some clearer principle. And I've got a good impression with Weigo's presentation in the Tokyo's IFRS conference. He said that there is no good principle of recycling. So probably it may take years, but we can't reach a consensus, but this is what we should tackle. That's what I wanted to say.
Thank you. I'm pleased to know that you're very concerned about managing CTA and recycling. I imagine you also focus on the economics of the businesses as well. Yeah. All right. There's been a number of people who've suggested that we gave up too soon. That means that we have to reach a consensus. I remind you the reason it's not on the agenda is because at the previous meeting we didn't think we could reach a consensus. The papers originally brought to you by the staff looked at an approach that I think is certainly, Jan, you would have thought it was consistent with the literature, otherwise you wouldn't have brought it, and that would recognize any reduction in the interest in a foreign subsidiary, which would be consistent with a capital reduction, which was referred to. So it's not just that it is a proportionate of the...
A relative.
So it's any reduction in the amount would result in recycling of CTA. And what one or two of you found a little bit uncomfortable was that that would mean that any dividend paid by the foreign operation would also trigger recycling, and it would raise questions about what amounts would be recycled, whether they had to be specific, whether it was on an average basis or whatever. There are operational things. So I don't need to remind you of any more of the opportunities that you have, but who would now like to reconsider the position that they might have taken before and would be willing to work towards reaching a consensus on this? I'm going to say, and following the papers that the staff have presented before, to expand on that as being the way forward. So that's recycling would be triggered by any amount of reduction in the interest in the foreign operation. Who would support that approach? You want to ask a question, John?
I support the principle. As I mentioned at the previous meeting, maybe we should entertain a practical accommodation for dividend out of current profits, because the mechanic is pretty complicated to figure out which amounts and when. But it's only a practical accommodation. For the principle, I agree.
Well, so it's only practical, but it then is in direct contrast with the change that the board made to IAS 27 a couple of years ago, when it said don't make any distinction in dividends, either between pre-acquisition or post-acquisition. Don't concern yourself with whether it's in the nature of a capital repayment or a revenue repayment. So that would be one other barrier to coming to a conclusion. I mean, the alternative is, there wasn't sufficient support to proceed with that one. The alternative would be to proceed with an approach that only triggers recycling in the event that's specifically referred to in the standard now, with the modifications that will be made in the next few months when the joint ventures document is updated. And that is, if it's a total disposal, it's a total disposal. If it's a partial disposal, in certain circumstances it's accounted for as if it was a disposal total. That is where you lose control of a subsidiary, and that would trigger that event.
So if you lose significant influence.
If you lose significant influence, but you've retained
An investment.
Yeah. On the same on joint ventures. And other than that, then I think the alternative approach in Jan's paper was that if there is a change in the relative ownership, that is, if you had previously owned within an associate 40% and it's now gone down to 30% for some reason, then you would account for that as a partial disposal. That's correct. So you wouldn't address, or it would deal with the question of dividends, because dividends presumably are issued pro rata to all the shareholders, so there's no change in the relative position. So who would support pursuing an approach based on a change in the relative ownership interest triggering recycling of CTA? Is that a vote or?
No, it's a question, Bob. I mean, are you asking us now to vote definitively on an accounting decision, or vote with a view to the staff doing more work on that issue?
With the view to the staff doing more work, but there's no point in telling the staff to do more work if I've got four people who want to go one way, four people who want to go the other way, and the rest of you can't make up your mind. because the decision that we took before then, I think, is the decision that stands, that we are unable to reach a consensus in a reasonable period of time. Guido?
Well, my recollection of the discussion that we had was that people were really struggling with the absolute reduction effect pattern. I did not recall that anybody had a problem with relative reduction, which I think there is no diversity in practice right now, as far as I can see it. So the issue that we may put on the agenda again and ask the staff to come up with some solutions is the absolute reduction issue. That's why I was also struggling to see why we were asked, would you agree with relative reduction? I think everybody would agree with that. But it doesn't mean that, I think the absolute reduction is really the issue, whether we have enough support. And I agree with you, Bob, that we have to think right now also about which questions we have to answer then. If we say yes, absolute reduction, then the first question will be every absolute reduction, also including normal dividends. And the second question would be, how do you calculate the part that you recycle? That's easy for a relative reduction. You just take the same percentage that you're losing, but it's much harder for an absolute reduction. And if we think we cannot come up with a solution on that, then probably we should not take it on the agenda. Just telling people absolute reductions should also lead to a recycling, but we are not telling you how to calculate it doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
Okay, Ruth?
I didn't support taking it onto the agenda, partly because I didn't think we could reach consensus, but also because I didn't think we were addressing what the critical issues were, and that's why I do think the Canadian letter has focused on that, and I think the focus is on what is a disposal and what is a partial disposal, rather than what is a reduction. They're two different things, a reduction versus a disposal. And I would support some sort of clarification that looks at the disposal aspect rather than the reduction aspect. And then I think that deals with the dividend issue as well. But I'm concerned about spending staff and the committee's time on this issue for much longer. So before proceeding, I'd like to get some sense around the table as to whether we think we could reach consensus on it.
Peggy?
I'm not sure, I agree that there was all consensus regarding proportionate reduction, and I think we had a lot of discussion at the last meeting on that as well. So it would be good to just get a sense that everybody agrees that that's pretty clear how the accounting has gone on that, and we don't need to address that. I'm not positive that that's the case. Before we move to absolute.
Scott?
Yeah, I agree with Peggy. I don't think that there is as much consensus as we might hope on proportionate reduction. I think if you go down from 40 to 30 because the investee sells shares to a third party, I don't think that everybody looks at that as a recycling event. The only events that I think we have consistency on are events that are both proportionate and absolute. So you go from 40 to 30 because you sold shares. Those I think we have consistency on, but where we have a dividend or something similar, such that we have an absolute reduction without a proportionate reduction, or when the subsidiary sells new shares to a third party, such that we have a proportionate reduction without an absolute reduction, I think there's diversity in both of those cases.
Yeah, just to clarify the language that's in the standard, of course, which talks in paragraphs 48 and 49 about disposal or partial disposal of a foreign operation. There's a lot of discussion about partial disposal of a subsidiary and how you reattribute proportionate share of cumulative amount and so on, but then 48D comes in and says a partial disposal of an entity's interest in a foreign operation is any reduction in an entity's ownership interest in a foreign operation, except those reductions in paragraph 48 that are accounted for as disposals. So if it isn't a disposal, it's a partial disposal if it's any reduction in an entity's ownership interest. And so I suppose the question is, well, what is any reduction in an ownership interest? And so that's the question of, is it a relative reduction or is it an absolute reduction? And that really is the question that I put to you earlier as to which of the routes you want to follow, if we want to follow it at all. No, Michael. Joanna?
I think that the issue, if you are, we've been focusing on 48D and we're saying we're trying to interpret those words, which is much tighter than the actual question was. And I think what the Canadians are saying is if we look at 48 and 49 as a whole and actually say what was the intention of those as a whole, we might be able to get somewhere. So, if you like, I'm not answering your question because I guess what I'm saying is I actually think I agree with the Canadians that I think we shouldn't be just focusing on 48D because I think 48D possibly conflicts with some of the other bits of now 48, A to C is D and 49, and therefore it's actually looking at it as a whole, and I can't give you a solution or an answer or my necessarily view now, but I just wonder whether we should spend a little bit more time actually considering that. But I'm not adamant in the fact that we have to do that.
I don't think we can reach consensus easily without having a clearer principle of recycle. Because just the question is not that simple as absolute or proportionate. Personally, I don't think proportionate is the proper way, but if you say it, absolute reduction is the trigger of recycle, then if we said so, then we have to make clear the guidance of recycle trigger of absolute reduction. We need more guidance on calculation or whether we include dividend or not. In case dividend, how can we calculate the CGAs to be recycled? It's very difficult. And therefore, I don't think we can reach consensus easily. So that's why I think I agree with agenda decision itself at this moment. But what I'm saying is because this is very important, so we need to try to make clear the principle of this kind of CCA recycling as a post 2011 agenda. That is what I'm saying.
So you would suggest, rather than making no recommendation to the board in here, that we recommend that the board considers the foreign currency translation issues post 2011. Okay, I'm getting a lot of nods for that, so we can certainly change that in the agenda decision. Does anybody object to not doing any more work, modifying the agenda decision to encourage the board to take it on post 2011. Just votes without comments. So just one objection. So in that case, then, if we can then say we'll confirm the agenda decision as modified in paragraph 1, and that the committee, in the end of paragraph 3, the committee decided not to add the issue to its agenda, but to recommend that the board address the issue through a review of IS 21 in its post 2011 agenda. Okay. You all right with that, John?
Can you?
You want to make any final comments? You don't have to.
No, I'm fine with this.
Good. And Fabienne is here. Fabienne, if you'd like to join us. This is a topic that's called new items for initial consideration, but it's really items that we didn't consider at the previous meeting that we are going to reconsider now. So you've had two opportunities to read and reread. Sorry, Patrick or Julie, were you wanting to come in?
It was me, yeah. Just a drafting point, but maybe of some substance on CTA. I never could remember what we meant by relative and absolute without looking back at how we defined them. I mean, when I read it, the first time I read the paper cold, I didn't know what it meant, because when I can think of a situation that's both and we tee it up as if everything's always either or. So I think if we just use those two words, I think people will be, well, I humbly think people may be as confused as I always was. So I just would suggest in drafting the final thing, in you've already modified how you describe it, a few more words to say exactly what we're talking about might be helpful. I mean, you have a few more words in the paper. It's not changing the substance, but
okay.
I just find that if I'm a foil,
I stumbled over it.
Yeah, if I'm a foil for the average person, I stumbled. So